right after that, the man who had done everything to keep this issue under when I was doing the story for 60 Minutes and working on the book, was suddenly put in charge by President Bush of all humanitarian funds for the Soviet Union. So you see how it works?
It wouldn't be Richard Armitage, would it?
It certainly would.
Yes. Old Mr. Armitage, according to Bill Grice, was deeply involved in the drug trafficking. And, of course, he is a personal friend of another well-known American, Oliver North. Well, in fact, Oliver refers to him as his closest friend. And, of course, maybe that explains the drugs at MENA Airport and the recent book compromise. Well, basically, I think one of the things that our listeners should know about is the fact that the North Vietnamese kept the prisoners because we had betrayed the promise that Henry Kissinger had been made about reparations payments. Could you cover that part of the story?
Well, it was actually Nixon who made a deal with the Vietnamese. I think he did this without Kissinger's knowledge at the beginning, that they would get $3.5 billion in reparations money. And then, of course, with Watergate and everything else that happened at that time, Nixon was not able to fulfill his obligation. I think he just he didn't care anymore. I think at one point he probably was quite involved with the prisoners. A lot of the prisoners feel very strongly that he was a very strong card in their release, the ones that came home. But he was out of the picture. And the American Congress, when they saw how badly the prisoners who came back had been treated, certainly didn't want to talk about reparations. And no one in our government had the courage to say, but, you know, they definitely still have people and we have the intelligence on it. Instead, they denied it. And they denied it for years. Those years right after the war, the intelligence that was coming out was incredible. I mean, there were defectors who had everything, you know, exactly where they had been placed, exactly what they had said 3 weeks before. Add that to the rest of the information that we had, which consisted of things like voice recordings when they were captured, people who were working for us, agents who were reporting back on their treatment. All of that was denied and covered up, and anyone who dared to talk about it got into trouble.
Well, you know, it seems incredible, and I think it probably is to most of our listeners, that there could be this degree of control over the government, over the media. Do you think that somebody besides you and a few other people, you know, would be coming forward and doing this? I know when I went back to Washington, D.C. and went to the Vietnam Memorial, there was a tent close at hand with Vietnam veterans who were trying to get people to understand that the boys were still there. And yet you never, when you see a picture of the Vietnam Memorial, see a picture of that tent where the soldiers are still there proclaiming, "We abandoned American soldiers."
No, and, you know, people, well, one, don't want to believe it. But I think the biggest problem is that the American people who do know, and I think it's now the statistics are something like 90% know that men were left behind and believe it. The problem is that they're the nicest part of the population, and they have no sense anymore of the use of power. You know, I think we've forgotten what the American Revolution was about in one sense. We feel we have no power. We feel that you have to be a billionaire or that you have to be in Washington to do things. I think that, you know, if there were a really huge outcry, if it were heard all the time, if we made ourselves heard the way other groups make themselves heard in Washington, they would have to change. But, you know, I still don't know why Senator Helms, for example, who was so gung-ho on this issue and who personally promised me, among other things, that he would take this to the end, suddenly backed off and handed the whole mechanism and everything over to the Senate Select Committee.
It was very discouraging when even Senator Helms fired the people who were doing such a good job.
That's right.
On his
that's
own
right.
Committee.
You see, what happens? It's because those people don't want to give up what they have. Their values are totally caught up with their careers, their money, whatever, their reputation. Whereas the people who know the truth, their priorities are really still straight. They honestly believe what our country was founded on. They live it. They believe in the individual rights, and they believe that an American soldier is not the way a European soldier was 300 years ago. He's not cannon fodder. He is an individual, and he keeps his rights, even though he is willing to sacrifice his life for his country. But there's no way that they can effectively bring those beliefs to the fore. I mean, it seems to me, and it's because they're too nice.
Well, I'll tell you what, you know, Monica, there are little stations like ours all over the country. Actually, this has a pretty good reach. We go from San Francisco to, I got a call the other day from Los Banos. Somebody comes out every evening at 4 o'clock, takes the car out of the garage, turns up the radio, and listens to this program, and I hope he's listening tonight. But more and more people are becoming informed, and that's what the power elite, the establishment, can't stand, is that we still have talk radio, which is one of the greatest forces for good in America. And if America is going to be saved, it's going to be programs like this, and people like you are willing to come on and tell your story.
Well, I hope you open some radio stations in Arizona and get rid of Senator McCain.
I wouldn't be at all adverse to that. We are basically what we do. This is a Christian radio station. I couldn't afford to go on secular radio, but the manager of the station has been very generous and given us a very good rate so that we can afford to be on. And hopefully, with the support of our listeners, we're going to be able to expand this, not only on the West Coast, but all across America, getting on the satellite. That's our next job. Well, our telephone number here is 464-8295 or 1-800-5-TALK-TO-YOU. That's 1-800-582-5528. If you'd like to talk to Monica at all about The Boys We Left Behind and her extensive study of this, or if you'd like to talk about the drug issue, because I think this is one of the most frightening things as we fight a war on drugs, and we see the leading conservative in America, Mr. William Bennett, formerly drug czar. Maybe he didn't know that the government was involved in drugs while he was waging the war on drugs. And, of course, in your book, you follow the money into Australia, and there was a bank over there that was involved in laundering money. What was that story?
Well, there have always been banks, and they've changed names periodically, that have handled the money for the CIA proprietaries. And I think laundering drugs is just one aspect of that. The whole savings and loan scandal was involved with those banks. It's very hard to sort of follow the course of that because, again, you've got this really powerful network following along. When it reaches a point where too much light is put on it, as it happened with the bank in Australia, they simply changed names. That bank in Australia ended up being the Bank of Commerce and Credit that we all heard about 2 years ago, and what was interesting about that was that at least the New York government establishment under Morgenthau had the courage to take it on, but there was only so far they could go with it, and I think the chief investigator for that had the perfect comment about it. His name was Moscow, and it's kind of funny, and he said that, you know, when it's so pervasive, when the corruption is in every part of the government, it becomes impossible for democracy to function. And that was his comment on the way the intelligence agencies in the United States brought in the money from illegal activities, laundered it, and then used it for their own activities, all under the guise of patriotism, right? We need to make this kind of money so that we can fight guerrilla wars in places like Central America, in places like Vietnam, without any kind of supervision. And this is the prevailing belief. And I don't really know how that can be stopped. In my experience with this whole issue, there was only one person who really took this on from top to bottom, and he has been totally maligned and smeared. His name was Danny Sheehan. He headed an organization called the Christic Institute in Washington. And he took on a very specific group of men who had brought in drugs through a route in Florida.
Could you hold just a minute?
Yeah.
We want to get to that, but we've got to go to our next commercial break here. And we want to mention to our leaders what I believe is one of the most important books we have. And that is a book entitled The Creature from Jekyll Island, which is the story of all things, money. And it is the story of the secret meeting that was held in Jekyll Island back in 1911 when the bankers of America created a banking cartel that became the Federal Reserve System by which they control your wealth, and they are progressively diminishing this as they drop the value of the dollar. They create economic booms and economic contractions by manipulating the money supply. They control your destiny. The Creature from Jekyll Island is one of the finest analyses of the Federal Reserve System, a privately owned bank, which, of course, the government doesn't want you to know about. They want you to think it's part of the government. It is not. It is a privately owned central bank. You can get it by calling 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, The Creature from Jekyll Island. And this is Dr. Stan, I guess, this afternoon, Monica Stevenson, who's written the book Kiss the Boys Goodbye, one of the most important books going into the background, the betrayal of the American soldiers we left that behind, and the government involvement in the drug trafficking, because you can't have a drug war unless you got drugs. And we were talking about Danny Sheehan of the Christic Institute, and of course, you know, Monica, what they're doing is they're getting the conservatives to fight the liberals and the liberals to fight the conservatives, so we can't get together and fight the really common enemy.
You've got it, because what they've done with, you know, I've been in conservative congressmen's offices, and you bring up the name Danny Sheehan, and they say he's a communist. Well, he's not. I mean, I know for a fact, because I was in on some of this, that Ross Perot has sought him out for his information. He happens to have a Ralph Nader-like mind, and he collects this, and he is a very good lawyer, and he brought this suit, and the lawyers who worked with him were very good.
Of course, the judges set out to destroy him and actually made him pay a phenomenal amount of money.
That's right. They fined him $1 million for bringing a frivolous suit, and meantime, the IRS totally wiped him out. They took his last typewriter in Washington. I mean, it's lucky that he is one of these people who is totally unconcerned about material things, and so even though he has children, he has not given up the struggle. But there is no more Christic Institute in Washington, although, you know, he's actually in California now. He's teaching a course at the university on the secret history of the United States, which I think is fascinating. But what's really interesting is that after they destroyed him, and the people who supported him did pull together the $1 million to pay the fine. Now the government wants him retroactively to make a formal statement, sworn statement, that he himself acknowledges that he brought a frivolous suit. Well, now I wonder why they have to go to all that trouble after they've already wiped him out.
Because they don't want the American people ever to know the truth. Whereabouts is Danny Sheehan? We'd like to get him as a guest.
He would be great to go on your show. He's at the University of Southern California, I think, and the course is The Secret History of the United States.
All right, fine. Do you have his number? I don't ask you to get it now, but do you have it?
Yes, I do.
Okay, we'll get in touch with you later and get that, because I would love to have him on. Well, let's go to Liberty here. Hi, Liberty.
Hi, Dr. Stan.
Hey, did you have a question or comment?
Oh, dear, this is so intense. How can I'm so glad that this woman is doing what she's done and letting us know the awful truth. How can citizens have confidence in our government when we know this is happening, and that in every jail in the country these drugs are available?
Okay, how can we have faith in the government when we know these things are happening?
Well, I don't think we can have faith in the government as it stands. I just think that it requires an incredible amount of vigilance and real hard work. And when you have people in Congress who are known to have been involved in this, they really must be voted out. And you know, and that's hard work. It's not enough to talk about it.
I agree with you totally. It was Thomas Jefferson who said, if any people hope to be both free and ignorant and live in a civilized state, they hope what never has and never can be. And Liberty, what we've got to do is inform the public, and you've got to tape these programs and circulate them. And we need people to challenge and to find out. And when they first hear it, they're not going to be able to believe. But as time goes by and they hear it from many people and they begin seeing what's going on and understanding what's happening in Washington, D.C., they'll understand somebody's taken our government and we got to take it back. Okay, any other question or comment?
Well, I just want to say that in this book that I'm reading, The Emperor Wears No Clothes,
mm-hmm.
they talk about 12 million years of incarceration. Now, we're talking at least $20,000 a year. And this is a lot of money, and there really is no victim. Of course, where people abuse drugs, I really believe that this the ones that are unteachable overdo these things, and this way they're removed from the gene pool early. And there's nothing we can do about people that abuse whatever they abuse.
Sure.
Abuse is one of the things that seem to be built into our culture. But for the rest of us that are teachable, we really need to revise this the policies that have been going on for all these years. And thanks again for both of you for what you're doing.
Okay, fine. Thank you so much, Liberty. Bye-bye.
Well, you know, I have a very good friend, someone I actually met on a symposium, who used to be one of our country's chief drug people. And he, during the Reagan administration, when Nice was attorney general, he was involved in setting up one of the largest stings in Mexico that this country had ever been involved in. And he made the mistake of letting the attorney general know exactly when it was going to happen. I think they waited until the night before. And the attorney general, Nice, called his counterpart in Mexico, despite the fact that one of the key drug pins down there that they were trying to get was a nephew of the Mexican equivalent of the attorney general. And that entire sting operation was compromised. And I think 35 of our people were wounded or killed. And the man I'm talking about barely got away with his life. And again, you see, this is what happens. But I really believe what he says the only solution to the drug problem is. It's very, very harsh, and it's been tried, unfortunately, only in totalitarian societies. But I think to some degree it would work in North America. He says it does not do to say, let's just go after the top guys, because it's impossible to go after the top guys. They have the power to wash themselves clean. And everybody's so intimidated that they can't be touched. The only way to really start making a dent in the drug problem is to go after all the little people and all the middle people. In other words, such harsh sentences for people who just use a little bit of it that the next time it will be too hard for them. It won't be worth it. And I think we have to go in that direction, and we have to start maybe in small. You have to start at the local level, in small towns, move on to the state level, and then try to get it on a national level.
Well, it is a difficult problem, but unless we can get the government out of drugs, we're not going to be able to do anything. And, of course, you're speaking of Attorney General Meese, who now happens to be with the Heritage Foundation, the most premier conservative think tank in America, Republican think tank. It sort of gives you cause to wonder what's really going on in our society. Well, I want to thank you so much for taking the time to be with us out of your busy time. Would you like, we've got about 2 minutes, could you like to sum up?
Well, I tell you, I don't know if I can sum this up, but I just read a wonderful article by a man who's now dead. He was an Englishman named Pasha Glubb. He had spent a lot of time in the Middle East. And he writes about, he takes about 13 societies going all the way back to Roman times. And he says they go in cycles. And each cycle is about 270 years. We're approaching that. And at the end of the cycle, it is always an extreme period of decadence where the leaders and the most celebrated people are actors and entertainers, where soldiers are spat upon and considered, you know, absolutely the lowest form of life. And what happens when a society allows that to happen? It is wiped out by a young upstart country, by somebody strong, like some of the Middle Eastern countries that are extremely rigorous in their religious beliefs, etc. I think we are very close to, I think we're in the decadent period, and we are very close to losing our strength and being wiped out. I think that's something for people to think about. I don't know whether it can be turned around, but boy, we've got to start considering it to even have a chance.
Well, it was General MacArthur who said there's no incident in all history where a nation has gone into moral and spiritual decline where it has survived unless there was a rejuvenation of those moral and spiritual principles
right.
upon which that nation was founded. And I agree with you totally. We're in trouble, but we appreciate so much your being with us and taking your time. And if I'll call you sometime later to get Danny Sheehan's number. He is a profound liberal, but he and I probably feel very much akin as far as what's happening and the betrayal of the American.
Well, I don't really believe in those labels.
I don't either.
Maybe liberal with a small L, which you are as well.
Oh, I agree with you totally. And the trouble is, they've been manipulating us into disliking one another. Maybe we better sit down at the same table and see what we can do to fight the common enemy.
Yeah, you know, radical means going back to the roots. Now, let's all be radical.
All right, fine. I go along with it. Thanks so much for being with us.
Okay, it was nice being with you.
Appreciate it. Bye-bye and God bless you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
This is Dr. Stan here on Radio Liberty, and we want to mention several things which you should get. First of all, you should get a copy of Kiss the Boys Goodbye, and we have them here. They're $14.95 plus shipping and tax, and we have to give money to Pete Wilson, of course. And then, of course, you really need to get that video entitled Americans Betrayed. It was put out by Captain Red McDaniels, who himself was a prisoner of war. His story is an amazing story, but this video is amazing, and you're going to see many of the key people in government admitting before the Senate committees that we intentionally abandoned the boys because we didn't want to pay the $3.5 billion that had been promised. So the North Vietnamese were just insisting we keep our promise, but you see, if the boys came back, then everybody would know that the government was lying, the media was lying, and so they don't want them back. I think the most interesting thing that Monica said was that Colonel Peck had talked about the fact when he was at a party that the North Vietnamese had said, if you don't give us recognition, we're going to send the boys home. And, of course, the last thing that the evil people who have gained control of our government want is for those boys from homes just like yours and mine, from communities just like yours and mine, they don't want them to come home. They want them to stay there because they do not want the American people to understand that the media in America is totally controlled, the government is totally controlled, and yes, ladies and gentlemen, we have evil people working at the highest echelons of government. So, Americans abandoned, you can get that by calling 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, or you can, if you want to get both that and Kiss the Boys Goodbye, give us a call here at 464-8295. That's 464-TAX-L, if that's the way you like to remember this. Well, ladies and gentlemen, America is in trouble today. We are involved in a spiritual war. The forces in Washington, D.C. are evil. We have replaced the Democrats with the Republicans. You'll be glad to know that Newt Gingrich is a well-known New Ager. If you go into the background of his world futurist New Age affiliations, it will frighten the living daylights out of you, which is why he's backing Gap. And, of course, Robert Dole is now backing Gap. We are moving away from America's national sovereignty. And the question is, what are you going to do about it? Bye-bye and God bless you.